We started talking about the Ahavta L'Recha Kamocha, and we spoke a lot about how important that is, and we mentioned that that was just the prelude, that was just the introduction to get into a larger topic about a halachically significant topic about where Kavod HaBrios, where Ahavta L'Recha Kamocha, where human dignity actually plays into the halachic determination of a given shaila. And that's what we're going to talk about today. You'll be surprised of how much of a determining factor, how central of a role Kavod HaBrios plays when we talk about strict halacha l'maisa also. You'll think, well, halacha is the halacha. It's cut and dry. This is what it is, and what do we care about people's feelings? But as we'll see, it does play in very seriously to what the determination of the psak is actually going to be. Just by one final introduction, after the last week was a complete introduction, but just one final point that I was reminded of this week that I really should have said last week, but I think it really leads us into our point for today. In the very beginning of Sefer Dvarim, we have Moshe Rabbeinu is giving his last speech to the Jewish people. As we know, Moshe Rabbeinu was not allowed entry into Eretz Yisrael, so he's giving his speech in Eber HaYarden, outside of Eretz Yisrael. And very often when you have a person who's about to pass away, so they give instructions to the children or to the followers, whoever it might be, they give instructions of what they expect, or they give Musar, they give whatever it might be, some sort of direction to the generation that's coming. So over here we have at the very beginning of Sefer Dvarim, Perek Aleph, Pasuk Aleph, Eile Hadvar Masha Dibra Moshe Al Kol Yisrael Be'Ever HaYarden. These are the words that Moshe Rabbeinu spoke to the entire Jewish people in Ever HaYarden. Why was it in Ever HaYarden? Because Moshe Rabbeinu was not allowed to cross over with them, so he had to give the speech before. And there the Pasuk is very unclear, very ambiguous. We're told all these strange terminologies in the Pasuk that we don't really know what they're referring to. We don't really know what they're speaking about. Rashi explains over there, why do we have all these strange words in the Pasuk? Moshe Rabbeinu is speaking to the Jewish people and he reminds them, oh, by the way, we were traveling here, we were traveling there. Lavan, Mechatzeros, V'dizahav, what are all these ambiguous terminologies? Says Rashi. Shemana kan kala makoma shech isan behen lefnei hamakom. Moshe Rabbeinu, before he passes away, decides to remind the Jewish people about all the times that they made atrocious mistakes. He reminds them about all the times that they made God angry throughout this sojourn in the desert. Vizkiran beremez mepnei kvodan shel Yisrael. So Moshe Rabbeinu doesn't mention these events outright. He just reminds them of the places where they took place. He reminds them of the encampment that they happened to be in when they made this particular mistake. So that's why the Pasuk is very ambiguous, and it says in Moshe Rabbeinu's speech, V'lavan v'chatzeros v'dizahav, he just mentions the places in which they took place, but he doesn't really mention anything about the event itself in that direction of Musar that he's given. Says Reb Chaim Shmulevitz. Let's read through such a beautiful piece in Reb Chaim Shmulevitz. This comes from the Sefer Sichas Musar, which was a collection of the drushas of the Musar Shmuzim that were given by Reb Chaim Shmulevitz. If you don't have it, and you read Hebrew well, you should buy the Sichas Musar. If you don't read and understand Hebrew well, you should buy it in English. It's an amazing book. The Sichas Musar is written both in English and in Hebrew. The English version is not as full as the Hebrew one. They just took the excerpts. They took the best parts. But it's a really fascinating book, and it's a beautiful compilation of a lot of very relevant Divrei Torah that are Musar-oriented. So says Rav Chaim Shmulevitz here, Moshe Rabbeinu yamim svurim lefnei Moshe. Moshe Rabbeinu, just a couple of days before he passes away, bevo liochiach es am Yisrael. Isn't it usually freezing in here?
Yes.
I guess you complained enough the last year of the year. Now they shut it off. 10 o'clock, okay. Moshe Rabbeinu yamim svurim lefnei Moshe. Just a couple of days before he died, bevo lochiach es am Yisrael, he comes to give Musar, he comes to give tochacha to the Jewish people, al hachatayim hayiduim hamufursamim lakol. He's not coming to point out that, oh, one time this neighbor got in some sort of fight with the other neighbor. He's not talking about this couple couldn't get along. That's not what he's giving Musar about. Moshe Rabbeinu is giving communal Musar about the averas that were mufursamim lakol. The whole world was aware of these averas. And what were those of Einehem? Just a couple of examples, says Reb Chaim Shmulevitz. He was talking to them about the Chet HaMeraglim. That's a pretty well-known Avera. Sha'alav Nigzera Misa Dor HaMidbar. Many people lost their lives because of what happened with the Chet HaMeraglim. V'lo zachu lihikanes la'aretz, and they were not able to go into Eretz Yisrael as a result of the mistake that they made with the Chet HaMeraglim. And not only that, Moshe Rabbeinu here is giving a musar about the Chet HaEgel. Serving Avodah Zarah, what can be worse than that? Asher adayin rovetz aleihem shelo nifra kulo. That was still hovering over their head. They were never forgiven for that egregious error that they made of serving the Egel Hazav. Va'af al pikin, says Reb Chaim Shmulevitz, and even though he was coming to address these major mistakes that were made throughout the experience in the desert, still he was careful, shelo lefarit es hachatan befeirish ela beremes. Still Moshe Rabbeinu was careful not to mention the events themselves, but just to somehow hint to it. Beremes. He doesn't even express what he's talking about. All he mentions is the place where these events took place and unfolded. The location. Kedei shelo levayshem. Because can you imagine how embarrassing it would have been? Moshe Rabbeinu is going to stand up and remind everyone of the Chet HaEgel. He's going to talk about the experience. He couldn't bring himself to do that. Af shahaya bezeh mishum mitzvah tochacha. Moshe Rabbeinu was fulfilling a mitzvah while he was doing this. What do you think? He was just telling off his children? He was just telling off the Jewish people because he enjoyed it? No, he was doing it because this is what's expected of a leader to do at this moment. He was fulfilling the mitzvah of Tochacha. Ha'ein zemelam deinu, says Reb Chaim Shmulevitz, does this not teach us? Magedola malas kavod abrius v'chiyuv hazehirus bazeh? Does this not teach us how careful we have to be, how sensitive we need to be when we're dealing with other people? Just take an example from Moshe Rabbeinu, he says. Ve'ein ha'dvar ma'murim dafka b'chvodo shel ha'klau kulo, says Reb Chaim Shmulevitz. Lest you think, well, Moshe Rabbeinu is dealing with the entire Jewish people, it's a good time to be sensitive when you're dealing with that many people. No. Ela af b'chavod ha'pacha shebebrios. Even when you're dealing with the lowest of humanity, you have to have this perspective as well. How do you know that's true, says Reb Chaim Shmulevitz? Moshe Rabbeinu is talking to the entire Jewish people. How do you know even when you're not talking to such a elevated people, when you're not dealing with such a wonderful, righteous nation, how do you know that you also have to make sure that Kavod Abrios is front and center in your perspective? So he brings a proof from Bilam. Now, we're all familiar with the story of Bilam. Bilam was a Navi. Not just a Navi, Bilam was probably as great a Navi, almost like Moshe Rabbeinu, just he wasn't Jewish. So he was an incredible Navi. He was hired to curse the Jewish people. And he's on his way, and unbelievable miracles happen. His donkey starts talking to him. Bilam starts having a conversation back with the donkey. It's an amazing story. And ultimately, Bilam loses his life. So look at that story. V'chematzino b'Bilam, we find by Bilam, shemiyad la'achar sha'asono hochicha oso. So we have an incredible story. Bilam is hired to curse the Jewish people. And Bilam is highly acclaimed, world-renowned. Everybody knows him, and we know if we have to hire somebody to curse the Jewish people, who else are we going to go to other than Bilam? Now, in the middle of the whole encounter, Bilam's donkey shuts him up. Bilam's donkey totally outdoes him. It's an amazing accomplishment. But what happens after that? Says Reb Chaim Shmulevitz, the Medrash tells us, that right after that, that donkey, Mesa, the donkey died. Why'd the donkey die? What did the donkey do wrong? So the Medrash says, Shelo Yomru, that people shouldn't walk by and say, Zuhi Sesilka es Bilam bitochachta. Imagine what would happen. This donkey is going to be kept alive. And for all posterity, people are going to come around and say, you see that donkey? Do you remember the story that happened to Bilam? What a fool. He was talking to his donkey. He thought that was normal. He didn't even get the message when the donkey starts speaking to a human being that there's something greater that's happening here. I should open my eyes and understand what I'm in the middle of. Can you imagine the embarrassment that it would have caused Bilam if donkey would have been kept alive? Now says Reb Chaim Shmulevitz, Bilam wouldn't be around to say his side of the story. I'm sure he had a good side of the story, but he wouldn't be around to answer. V'chas ha'makom ha'kavod ha'brios. Nebuch, God feels so bad for Bilam. I mean, how can we keep the donkey alive? After all, it's going to be so embarrassing for him. People are going to come along and point at the donkey and remind themselves of the whole story. Says Reb Chaim Shmulevitz, Bilam haya avi avos ha'pchiso sheba olam. Bilam was the lowest of the low. He was the lowest of the low. Af al pikin, and yet, even though we're talking about Bilam, that's what we're describing in the story. Mechashash lepigia bechvodo. Because we're concerned that we shouldn't bring one moment of embarrassment more to Bilam than what he deserved. Heimis HaKadosh Baruch Hu Esa Aso. God decided that we got to get rid of this donkey. Now, somebody asked last night by the shir, well, why is that fair to the donkey? What did the donkey do wrong? And I thought that was a great layup to talk about the current events. Right? Because, yes, it's true we care about animals, but not at the expense of human beings. I forgot who it is, but they say a story. I can't remember where I read it. I read it a while ago. They say a story about one of the great gadolim in Europe that saw one day that the there was a German who was, he was peeking into the window of a German. I'm not sure why he was looking in. But he was walking by the house and he sees that there was a dog sitting on the table and the German was feeding the dog with a fork and a knife. And this gadol came back to the yeshiva and he said, if we can have human beings that are treating animals like human beings, there will come a time when these same people will treat human beings like animals. And that's exactly what happened. That's exactly what happened. And that's how dangerous a society we're living in now. How many people are sitting out of abortion clinics and protesting everything that's going on? No one. But how many people are sitting outside of that zoo and protesting the fact that they saved a young child instead of killing that gorilla? Yes, it's true we have sensitivity and we have caring and we have feeling for animals, but not at the expense of human beings. And if Bilam's dignity is about to be compromised, we are going to care more about the human being than about the animal. And therefore God decided the animal has to lose its life. Look back in Reb Chaim Shmulevitz. Ve'af al pi, and even though she'ilu haya ha'ason chaya, even though had the animal been kept alive, haya kan kiddush Hashem, can you imagine we would have put him at the guest of honor at every dinner? We would have brought this animal around to all the communities that all the school children should see. Look what happens when he start up with the Jewish people. Look what happens when you try and curse somebody that you weren't supposed to. Even a donkey will react. Wouldn't that have been a Kiddush Hashem? Wouldn't that have created the most amazing Kiddush Hashem? Wouldn't everybody have been inspired by seeing this animal? And yet, says Reb Chaim Shmulevitz, Mikal makom kiven sheyesh behisharusa bechayim, since had I kept it alive, there would have been a pigia kala bepachos shebepchusim zeh, there would have been an embarrassment to this lowlife Bilam. Chas hamakom akvodo behemes asa asom. God decided, that's it. Bilam got what he deserved. He doesn't deserve 1 ounce more than what he got. No reason to further his embarrassment. We're going to get rid of this donkey. An amazing insight. It's such a beautiful insight. And Reb Chaim Shmulevitz goes on to explain that why is this the case? And it must be because we have an obligation of Kavod HaBrios. We have an obligation to keep in mind human dignity is so important. And yes, sometimes people need to be punished, and sometimes people need to be told off, but even when doing so, we have to be careful to do it with sensitivity. You know, I was thinking, forget about the Bilam example, but let's say when we tell our children or grandchildren about something that's important for them, and we point out a mistake that they have, or something that they've done wrong, and it's important as a parent or as an adult to sometimes do that, but how do we do it? If God is careful about the way he tells off Bilam, if Moshe Rabbeinu is careful about the way he gives Musar to the Jewish people, how do we give Musar to our own children? To call out a child in front of the other kids and tell them that they've done something wrong and cause them embarrassment, what right do we have to do that? There are rules of how we give tochacha. There's a Kavod HaBrios element that we need to keep in mind, regardless of how frustrated or upset we might be. We have to learn to control ourselves because there's Kavod HaBrios on the line. That's what Moshe Rabbeinu teaches us. That's what, obviously, the story of Bilam teaches us. And this is something that Reb Chaim Shmulevitz then tries to figure out, why is that the case? And he quotes a very powerful Medrash in Parshas Kedoshim. Just by way of understanding what it means, if you ever learn a Gemara, the Gemara is usually tries to learn out a new halacha from a pasuk. When you want to tell me something new, you want to tell me a chiddush, well, you have to prove it from somewhere. So you better quote a pasuk to back up your statement. So over here, Reb Chaim Shmulevitz points us to something which is very strange, very striking. The pasuk says in the beginning of Parshas Kedoshim, look at number Gimel. Kedoshim to you. You should be holy. Ki kadosh ani Hashem Elokecha. Okay, simple pasuk. We should be holy because God Himself is holy. So we try to emulate Him. We should try to live our lives by the same ideals. Says the Medrash. Yachol kamoni. You would have thought that your level of holiness is the same as the level of holiness as God Himself. Yachol kamoni, you may have thought your kedusha is the same as mine, God says. Talmud lomar, no, we need a pasuk to teach me that's not the case. Now, when the Gemara uses a pasuk to teach me something, it's because I would not have thought so otherwise. Now, without this pasuk, it means I would have thought otherwise. Talmud lomar ki kadosh ani, you're mistaken. Kedushasi lemala mikedushaschem. So again, I would have thought, yeah, human beings and God, same. Same. If not for the fact that we have a pasuk that comes to teach us that, no, you're great, but you're not as great as God, I would have thought that we are as great as God Himself. That we are as holy, that we do have that capacity, we do have that ability inside of ourselves to be as holy, as dignified, as sanctified as God Himself. What an incredibly powerful medrash, says Reb Chaim Shmulev. Does he know what that means? It means that's really what we have inside of ourselves. And have we not had a pasuk to teach us that that is not the case? We should have assumed that that is the case. That each and every one of us has inside of ourselves the power to be as holy, as sacred as God Himself. What an incredibly amazing insight. And once you understand that, says Reb Chaim Shmulev, you now know why even somebody as lowly as Bilam deserves our dignity and our respect. Because each and every person, Chaviv Adam Shanivar B'Tselem, each and every individual person was created in the image of God. Each and every person is having the capacity to be almost on the level of God Himself. And therefore, Reb Chaim Shmulevitz says, it is upon us to show what that means. It is upon us to highlight the fact that we respect what is inside the potential of each and every individual person. So with this introduction and together with last week, let's now get into explore some of the very famous cases and understand that Kavod Abrios is not just a nice fluffy idea of how we're supposed to react with other people, but it's something that really often is the determining factor in the halachic system, in the process. So we begin with the Gemara Brachos, Daf Yud Tes Amud Beis. Look at number Dalet. The Gemara tells us as follows. Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Rav. We're up to number Dalet on the first side of the sheet. Hamotzi Kilayim Bebigdo. So you have somebody who's walking down the street, and let's say we're talking the times of the Gemara where they just used to use one article of clothing. It's not like they had layers on top of layers, so they just had a robe or whatever it was. And now you find out, you see the tag sticking out and it says, wool and linen. I'm wearing kilayim. This is the only article of clothing that I'm wearing. I'm not allowed to continue to wear the kilayim because every moment that I wear it, I'm violating an avera. So what am I supposed to do? On the one hand, I'm in the middle of the street. If I take my clothing off, I'm going to have to run home without clothing on. On the other hand, I'm violating an avera every moment that I keep this article of clothing on myself. So what am I supposed to do? Says the Gemara. Hamotzi kilayim bebigdo, somebody who finds out that they have kilayim, and that's their article of clothing that they're wearing, posto afila b'shuk. My obligation is, you keep God in mind first. You take it off, doesn't matter how embarrassed you're going to be, doesn't matter how terrible the experience is going to be, you take it off in the middle of the street, and you figure out how to get home. My time, I asked the Gemara, why is this true? Ein chachma ve'ein tvuna ve'ein eitzel neged Hashem. Kam makom she'yesh chilul Hashem, ein cholken kavod l'rav. Yes, human dignity is very important, but not at the expense of God Himself. If God tells you you're not allowed to wear this article of clothing, then, if you find out, even in the middle of the street, and it's going to cause you horrific embarrassment, you are obligated to take it off and figure out how to get home. That's your problem. That's what the Gemara says. So the Gemara goes back and forth. Well, how can that be? What do you mean? Human dignity is very important. Back and forth, back and forth. Finally, the end result of the Gemara comes to, the conclusion is the following. Whenever you have a person who violates an avera, a biblical avera, a deraisa, then there's nothing to talk about. If you are actively violating an avera, you have to do whatever you can to stop violating the avera, even if it's going to compromise your own human dignity. If you are violating an avera b'sheva al tase, passively, then we say human dignity comes first. Kavod Abrios comes first. So again, If you're actively violating an avera, like I'm walking in the middle of the street, I see that I have a garment on me that has kilayim in it, I have to compromise my human dignity in order that I should save myself from violating the avera. On the other hand, if I am violating an avera b'sheva al taseh passively, I have the right to put human dignity before the avera. We'll see an example in a minute. Number two, says the Gemara. That's rule number one. Number two, says the Gemara. Whenever we're talking about an avera midirabanan, whenever we're talking about something which is only rabbinic in its nature, we assume kavod abrios always comes first. Kavod abrios is always going to override an issur derabanan. Okay, so those are the two rules. When we're dealing with an issur d'oraisa, if you're actively violating, you have to stop doing it right away, even though it's going to be at the expense of kavod abrios. If it's biblical and you're only violating passively, you're allowed to say human dignity comes first and you should violate the avera. However, when we deal with a din derabanan, with an avera that's only rabbinic, we assume that will be able to be violated under all circumstances. So take, for example, in Shulchan Aruch, in Hilchos Shabbos, we're told the following. Back in the times of the Gemara, when people used to have to relieve themselves, they didn't have tissues like we have now, so they used to use stones. How that worked, I don't know, but that's what they used to do. So the problem is, stones generally are muktzah on Shabbos. So what's a person supposed to do? They need to go out into the field on Shabbos, and they find a stone. But the problem is, you can't handle the stone. So what am I supposed to do? I should stay there for the rest of Shabbos? I should come back and be dirty for the rest of Shabbos? What's my option? What am I supposed to do? So the Shulchan Aruch says clearly, well, since muktzah is only a din derabanan, therefore kavod abrios obviously will come first. Therefore kavod abrios comes first. And even though the stones are generally going to be muktzah, since we're talking about a violation, a serious violation of my kavod abrios, of my dignity, I have a right to touch those stones and use them for whatever I need, and then go back to my house and have Shabbos normally. So you'll say that's not so relevant, because nowadays it really doesn't come up. When it does come up is the following. I imagine I'm not the only one that has been to a restroom on Shabbos where they don't have tissues. Right? So what do we do when we get there and we find out? So, you know, if you find out before, so you figure out what to do. But let's say you're already there, and now you realize, I don't have anything that's not cut yet. So what am I supposed to do? So what's the violation of cutting toilet paper on Shabbos? What would you say? D'oraisa or d'rabanan? Why is it d'rabanan? We have a malacha d'oraisa called mechatech. Cutting. What? So the perforations, not the perforations. Let's say I'm cutting on the lines, on the perforations. I want it to be nice. What's the violation? It's a violation d'oraisa. So I can't violate a din d'oraisa just because it's my human dignity. So what am I supposed to do? I have to go walk around the whole house now, embarrass myself till I find something to use? That can't be. So the answer is, the Shmir Shabbos Kelchasa writes in the name of Reb Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, the answer is, since there's a serious violation of Kavod Abrios here, since there's a serious concern of the fact that I'm going to embarrass myself, you have a right to cut the toilet paper Kila Achar Yad, which means not the normal way. Once you cut it not the normal way, that bumps it down to be no longer a Malacha D'Araisa. Now it becomes only an issur derabanan. So generally we would assume you're not supposed to go around cutting toilet paper on Shabbos. But if you're stuck in a situation like that, and the other alternative is to really embarrass yourself, so we assume you would be allowed to cut it, let's say, with your elbow or backhandedly, some other way that's not the normal way to cut it. That, says Rav Shlomo Zalman, is what a person should do in a case like that. Or he says, if you realize, let's say, on Shabbos that your whole house, you forgot to buy tissues before Shabbos, what are you going to do? So he says you can violate the issur derabanan of amir lenachri, of asking a non-Jew to come over and cut the toilet paper for you, if that's what's necessary. Because, again, there's a violation of kavod abrios, and kavod abrios would play a very central role. So again, this is basically a direct outcome of our Gemara. The Gemara says whenever you have a din derabanan that's at stake, and on the other hand, the alternative is going to be a major compromise of kavod abrios, we assume kavod abrios trumps, Kavod Abrios would override a consideration of an issur derabanan. So now listen to an amazingly intriguing story. And at the time that this story happened, it was a whole tumult in the whole halachic world. Everybody was writing about it, and there were tons of literature that was going around, tons of conversation and discussion about this very story. I hope it's not too famous. I hope people don't know it. Last night, nobody knew it, so I hope today is the same. But it's a very interesting story. And again, it it's an unfortunate story, but it borderlines also on the Kavod HaBrios aspect and how far we take it. Let's read the following. It's riveting, an amazing story. Look at number Hey on the source sheet. So I was asked the following question from the city of Lakewood. B'maisa shahaya, the following story, b'chassan b'yom chupasa. So the problem is you have a chassan who's a scatterbrain and he's nervous, he's coming to the wedding, he's going to forget this, he's going to forget that, he's going to do something else. So the day of my wedding, I couldn't find my glasses. Okay, so that's what I did the day of my wedding, I went to buy glasses. And they looked awful. So, what can you do? So, that's not such a big deal. So you don't have glasses that look nice, big deal. I assume it's not such a big deal. I hope. We're married anyway. What if the chassan forgets the ring? Big deal. That's a big deal. So what do? You have to figure out how to make sure that the chassan doesn't forget the ring at home. So this chassan was a very responsible chassan. He decides, I know that I'm a scatterbrain. I know that I'm going to be all over the place. I'm going to forget about the ring. So 2 days before the wedding, he goes to his married sister and he says, do me a favor. You make sure this gets to the wedding before the chuppah, you drop it into my pocket, and we'll be ready to go. Fine, good idea. Listen what happens. B'yom chupaso shehifkid es hatabas hakidushin shekana mikaspel etzel achoso. So he gives the ring to his sister in order that she should be responsible to bring it to the wedding and give it to him before the chuppah. Amanas shehititin lo es hatabas lifnei mamana chuppah. B'taut, by mistake, hechlifa ha'achos es hatabas shekana hachasim etabas shalom. So she comes to the wedding, and she was nervous also that she would forget, so she put it on her finger 2 days before the wedding. She shows up at the wedding, goes to her brother, takes the ring off, drops it in his pocket, but by mistake she gave him her ring instead of giving the ring that he had bought for his marriage. So far, so good. Anyone know this story?
No.
It gets much crazier, so hang in there. Ve'ekev kach, so nobody realizes. Now they're at the chuppah, Misada Kedushin tells them, take the ring out. Yeah, is it yours? Yes, it's mine. How much is it worth? This and that, whatever, all those questions. Now he goes, he's Mekadosh his wife. Great, everyone thinks it's fine. Ekev kach, as a result, kidesh hachasan es ishto betabas shahaisa shalachosu. They go ahead with this, and it turns out that he is Mekadosh his wife with a ring that didn't belong to him. Now what's the halach in a case like that? Doesn't work. You're not married. If you've ever been to a chuppah standing underneath, the Masada Kedushin always asks, does this belong to you? Did you buy it with your own money? Are you sure it belongs to you? Million questions. Really has to belong to you. If it doesn't belong to you, you're not married. Listen when they find out. Not right away. The wedding was on a Thursday night. The Shabbos Shevet Brachos was Friday night. Now the problem is, many women have the practice to take their rings off when they wash them Tilas Yadayim. So Friday night, the sister of the chassan goes to wash her hands for the meal. Here they are at the Shabbos Shevet Brachos, and she says, oh my God. She takes off her ring and she realizes, this is not the right ring. I gave my brother my ring, and he used my ring to be Mekadosh's wife. So here we are Friday night, in the middle of the Shabbos Shevet Brachos, all the guests and the caterer and everything, and the couple went home last night together, wherever they were, and now it turns out they're not married. So what do we do now? Before we get to questions. So what do we do now? So look what happened. Look at the next paragraph. Echad ha-chachamim pasak. One of the local rabbanim in Lakewood said, the kivin shenizbaru shakidushin lachalu. No, the kidushin was not valid. Too bad. Mikivan shakidush betabash shayna shalom. Bottom line, he used a ring that didn't belong to him. Therefore, tzarchu lachzer lekatsha. He has to remarry her again. They're not married. Umikivan shayim mekatsha nasaisha b'shabbos. Have you ever attended a wedding on Shabbos? No. So since he can't get married on Shabbos, tzarchu lifrash mimena ad achara Shabbos, he has to sleep in one house, she has to sleep in another house, asura mein b'yichud, they're not allowed to be together, call off the Shevet Brachos, tell everybody, forget it, not happening. So look, this is very, very highly uncomfortable. And basically, look at the next paragraph, v'od nechleku dayanei ha'ir, then they got into another further discussion in Mutter Lamer Shevet Brachos Besudas HaShabbos. Here we are, Friday night, everybody's here for the Shevet Brachos. Are we allowed to say Shevet Brachos? Once we pay the caterer, what are we going to do? We're going to go and explain to everybody what's happening? V'lechorer Pashut, Dimena Kiddushin Kiddushin HaBrachos Levatela. If they didn't get married, how can you make Shevet Brachos? That's a Bracha Levatela. Ula Moser, and on top of that, you're going to start explaining to everybody what happened. The couple's going to be embarrassed. The sister's going to be embarrassed. The parents are going to be going crazy. What are we going to do? So what are we supposed to do? So this was the major shaila. This was the major shaila. So for Shabbos morning, you'll say, let the chassan and kala call in sick. They won't show up. They'll say they couldn't make it. Okay, no big deal. But Friday night, here we are in the middle of the meal. What are we supposed to do? So it got into a whole discussion about what happens if the sister would have wanted, should have wanted, could have wanted, that had she known that her brother was going to have her ring, she obviously would have meant to give it to him, and really he could have used it back and forth. Do we assume like that? Do we not assume like that? That was the whole disagreement. But after the whole disagreement settled down, and whether the halacha recognizes such a provision, that if I give somebody something, had I known that they wanted to use it for something this important, I would have given it to them with a full heart. After all that died down, the bottom line is as follows. All of this is an absolute waste of time. Why is it a waste of time? In Hilchos Shabbos, Simen Shin Lamites, the Rama writes as follows. D'yesh matirin l'kadesh isha l'chatchila b'shabbos k'she'en lo isha ubanim. So what does that mean? The Rama gives the following story. Back in the times of the Gemara, maybe today as well, they wouldn't let the shidduch go through until there was a certain amount of money that each side was going to put up. So what happens is you have, unfortunately, a yisoma. You have a girl who doesn't have parents. What's going to be? Who's going to put up the money for her? So she gets engaged and they promise, we're going to put up $50,000 for the wedding, no problem, we're going to figure it out. And it's on the community to figure out how to get this girl married. The wedding is set for a Friday afternoon. Why'd they do that? That used to be the practice to save money. The Friday night meal would be the wedding meal. But you're not allowed to get married on Friday, on Shabbos. So this wedding was set 12 o'clock Friday afternoon, dancing, everything, meal Friday night. The Rama writes that this Yisoma comes 12 o'clock. Chassan says, all right, $50,000, what's happening? Couldn't come up with it. We're $30,000 short. What are we going to do? Okay, wedding is off. So what do we do? How can we allow this to happen? So we start knocking on doors, and we start going to everyone in the community saying, hey, look, this girl was supposed to get married today. Nebuch, she lost her parents a couple of years ago. We raised her. We're responsible to get her married. It's our responsibility. It's our obligation. And they're $30,000 short. Let's go. Cough it up. So we go around, find it 2 seconds before Shabbos, we come up with the money, run into shul, rabbi, we got it. Let's go. Let's get married. Sorry, we just did Kabbalah Shabbos. It's too late. It's already Shabbos. So they ask the shaila, what are we supposed to do? What are we supposed to do? Says the Rama, what's the reason why you're not allowed to get married on Shabbos? What's the reason you're not allowed to get married on Shabbos? The Gemara says in Maseches Beitza, the reason why is because midrabbanan. It's a din derabbanan. The same way you're not allowed to do a transaction on Shabbos in business because we're concerned maybe someone's going to write something down, so too you're not allowed to get married on Shabbos because that's like a transaction. That's like Mecha Chumemka. We're going to write down the Ksuba, we're going to write down a bunch of different things. And we're concerned that somebody's going to forget that it's Shabbos, so therefore we don't get married on Shabbos. Said the Rama, you have here a Yisoma who's so embarrassed that the wedding was supposed to be at 12 o'clock, and now we're going to have to make her wait until Matzah Shabbos, and because of a Din D'Rabbanan, you're going to tell me that she's not allowed to get married on Shabbos, and she's going to have to wait and be embarrassed yet another day? Absolutely not. Says the Rama, make the wedding tonight, Shabbos, figure out how to get to Edim, get the Masada Kedushin, let him be Mekadosh the woman, married, Suda, Shavar Brach is wonderful. That's what the Rama says. Because Kavod Abrios is so important. And over here, look further down, almost by the end. Look further down in this paragraph. 4 lines before the end. Elef Kavachomer Benidon Didan. 1,000 times over in our case. If the Rama said in a case like that, that we have a right to say, do the wedding on Shabbos, 1,000 times the more so in our case. That what? D'yesh lahatir lelo safek klal, that we would allow them on Friday night, go ahead, pull 2 Edim aside to another room, get married right now, and have the wedding take place. D'ein lecha bizayon gadol mizeh, there is nothing more embarrassing than this. Sheid stachu lahafrid es hachasim ha'kala, that the chasim and kala are going to have to separate from each other. V'yimnu mi levarach shever brachas, you're going to have to call off the shever brachas. V'atom kala ira koma v'lama asukein. Everyone's going to be wondering, hey, what happened? How come they didn't get married? They did get married. What's going on? They're calling it off. No shever brachas. And we're going to have to go and explain it. V'achasen v'hakala ha'domen l'melech u'malkal yichbishu p'neim b'karka. They're going to bury their heads in shame. B'boshes panam she'en dom alo k'dai b'zayin v'katzef u'mishum kach. Poshut li, it's obvious, it's clear. D'ilu ha'yisi sham ha'yisi mora. If I would have been there, I would have said, li'yachid shnei edim, go into a separate room. pull two Eidim aside, let the Masada Kedushin figure out how to make the wedding and get the couple married on a Friday night. And what you see is that Kavod HaBrios plays a very important role in determining the halachic process. Because here, all we're dealing with is an Issur D'Rabbanan of getting married on Shabbos, and since we're only dealing with an Issur D'Rabbanan, we have a right to say that Kavod HaBrios will override the halacha itself, the Din D'Rabbanan itself. So now, any questions so far? Yeah. So that's a good question. Isn't it true that once the couple goes home, isn't that true that that should be a way to yeah, so that's a very good question. The problem with that is, a woman, we have to do a kiddushin, and there are a couple of ways to go about doing a kiddushin. Generally now we do it with a ring, and we're mekadesh bekesef. If the couple has no idea that that's what they're trying to do at the time, then it doesn't really work. You have to have das, you have to have intent at the time. That's why it's important sometimes at a chuppah, just to keep in mind, if your children are getting married, it's important that sometimes the chas and the kala are joking around and don't really understand what's happening. If you don't understand what's happening at the time when you give the ring, the chas and the kala are not married when he breaks the glass. That's not what makes them married. What makes them married is when he gives the ring over to her and she accepts it and she wants to accept it. So you have to have das kone and das makne. You have to have intent on both sides of the equation. Both he has to have intent to want to marry her. She has to have intent to want to accept the marriage, and therefore this would be a major problem. It's a good point, but it's a major problem. Yes?
What about when he gets to the kasuba?
Yeah. Isn't that okay? Not really. That's just she's accepting the responsibility that he took upon herself. She's saying, I accept that. That's not the marriage itself. Yeah. It's the ring that does the marriage. So again, so now let's... Yeah. That's just for the engagement, meaning that's not really. So we mentioned before, let's bring ourselves back. We mentioned before that the primary source for all of this is the Gemara in Brachos Daf Yud Tes, where the Gemara tells us somebody's walking in the street and they find that they have kilayim in their garment. They have to rip it off in the middle of the street because they are actively violating an avera. So now, let's change the example a little bit. What would happen in a case like this? I happen to be in the designing business. I manufacture clothing. I can look at somebody's clothing right away and know what it's made of. The other person is just a simple person. They don't know. They go to the store, they buy an article of clothing, they put it on, they don't check, they have no idea. So I'm walking down the street next to somebody else. So if I'm the one who's wearing the kilayim and I know about it, the Gemara says you got to take it off. Doesn't matter how embarrassed you're going to be. What if I'm walking next to somebody else and this other person has no idea that they are wearing kilayim? Do I have an obligation to go and tell them, by the way, you got to take that off? Yeah, it's embarrassing, but you got to take it off because you're wearing kilayim. Do I have that obligation to do that or not? Why not? You have to take him home? So how come if it was me, Kavod HaBrios doesn't apply? How come if it was me, I would have to rip it off? So therefore, the rule that, I'm just playing devil's advocate, the rule that the Gemara gives is, if you're violating an avera actively, so that's the question. That's the question. Is that considered active? If I have no idea that I'm violating an avera, do you consider that to be an active violation?
No.
Or do you say, only when you know? So maybe I should wait for that person to get home, and then I'll tell them, don't wear that tomorrow. So that's a major dispute in the Rishonim. It's a machlokas between the Rush and the Rambam. The Rush is of the opinion, if somebody is doing something like that, and they have no idea that they're violating an avera, that's not called active. That's called being passive. That's not called being active. And therefore, wait till they get home, warn them that tomorrow they should not wear that jacket, but there's no reason to stop them in the middle of the street. And the Rambam says, absolutely not. That's active. They're walking in the street with the clothing. That's the same as you walking in the street. Doesn't matter if they know or they don't know. Now you'll say, well, this never happens. Why is it relevant? You'll see why it's relevant. Bididi habayuvda, in my own lifetime, and I'm not that old, in my own lifetime I had a story where this played in. Why? When I was in the Mir Yeshiva, so I was living in the dorm, and one of the Rosh Yeshiva passed away in the middle of the night, 3 o'clock in the morning, in our dorm building. I lived right on top of him. So there was a whole tumult in the middle of the dorm. He had a heart attack, 3 o'clock in the morning, and the Hatzalah came. They woke up all the guys. Everyone was downstairs in the Beis Medrash in their pajamas, saying Tehillim. Ultimately, he passed away in the middle of the night. Now, they didn't want to tell any of the staff of the yeshiva, because at the time, Reb Nosson Tzvi Finkel was the Rosh Yeshiva. He was very sick. And they were concerned if somebody's going to tell him at 4 o'clock in the morning that one of his first cousins just passed away, he's going to have a heart attack. So they were afraid if we tell anybody, then somebody's automatically going to call him. So we're not telling anyone. So the only ones who know about it are the boys in the dorm. So here we are. Everybody comes to me and says, well, what do we do? The Kohanim in our building knew to leave because everybody's up. The problem is in the Mir Yeshiva, it's like a big city. So there are underground tunnels that connect all the buildings to each other because all the kitchens and the dining rooms are all, they wheel the food back and forth between all the buildings. So the problem is we have a dead body in our building. It's 4 o'clock in the morning. And there's somebody in the building across the street that's connected to our building that is a Kohen. I'm sure there are plenty of Kohanim. Do we have an obligation to go ahead and wake up the Kohanim at 4 o'clock in the morning and tell them, get out of the building? Do we have that obligation or not? So they came to me and asked, what do you think? And I said, how am I supposed to know? They said, well, you're the son of a rabbi. I said, well, it's 4 o'clock in the morning. Who am I supposed to call? Then we realized, well, in America, it's not so late. So I tried calling my father. He wasn't home. My mother did not know the answer either. And I wasn't sure what to do. So who paskin the shayla for the Mir Yeshiva on that night? Rabbi Willig. Rabbi Willig paskin the shayla for the Mir Yeshiva, what we were supposed to do that night. And we went around taping up the bottom of the doors. It was a whole story. But basically, the Trumas Hadeshin, one of the Rishonim, the Ma'ari Isserlin in the 1300s discusses this question. Back in the times of his days, they didn't used to sleep in pajamas. They didn't have more than one article of clothing. So they used to take the clothing off at night, go and dip it in the river, whatever it was, wash it, hang it up to dry, and the next morning they would get dressed. But when they went to sleep, lights were out, there was no light outside at all, they would sleep without clothing on. That was it. So the Trumas Hadeshin wants to know, so what happens? You have somebody sleeping at night without clothing on, and now you find out that there's a dead body in the building. Do I have an obligation to tell that person who's a Kohen, you better get out of the building, I don't care that you're not wearing anything. What am I supposed to do? That's the same question, basically, as what happens if somebody else is wearing the kilayim and they're unaware of the fact that they're violating an aver? Is that called active or is that called passive? So how do we paskin la halacha? How do we paskin? Yeah. That's the question. So that's the question. That's exactly our question. So here we go. So the Shulchan Aruch weighs in on the issue. Shulchan Aruch weighs in on the issue. It turns out it's a machlokas, the Mechaber, and the Rama. So if there are any Sephardim in the room, I feel bad for you. Any Ashkenazim in the room, we paskin like the lenient approach. And that is that if the other person does not know that they are actively violating an Aveira at this time, there's no reason to stop them in their tracks and tell them right now if it's going to compromise their Kavod Abrios. Let's look at the Rama, number Zion. Look at number Zion, where the Rama writes in Yerodeyasim and Shin Ayin Beis. Says the Rama, Kohen Sheshochev Arim, if you have a Kohen who's sleeping without clothing on, and that used to be the norm. V'hu ba'ol ha'meis ve'eni yodea. He's sleeping in an apartment building. He has no idea that somebody just had a heart attack upstairs and died. And now he's violating every moment, he's violating the Avera of a Kohen becoming Tameh. Ein lahagilo, says the Rama. Don't tell him. Don't tell him. Shagadu kavod abrios, because it's going to compromise his dignity. Now he's going to have to run out of the building without clothing on until you figure out what to do with his body. Elo yikru lo stam. You should knock on the window and tell him, there's an emergency. Would you mind coming outside? We need your help for something. So he's going to figure out how to find his bathrobe, this and that, whatever. Then he'll go outside. And then once he's outside, we should tell him, by the way, you shouldn't really go back into the building because there's a dead body in the building. But to embarrass the person when they don't know that they're violating an Aveira, that's something that we should not do. So now, look how this is applied in our times. You'll say, well, that never happens either, even though it did happen. But you'll say, the Kilayim never happens, and this never happens with the dead body that you happen to have a Kohen. Look what a story that does happen. And unfortunately or fortunately, this kind of story happens quite often in our generation, now that we have the incredible revolution of the Baal Tshuva movement. This is something that is unprecedented. It's something no generation had the way we have it. And because of that, we have a whole slew of shilas that come about. So let's look at the following. Rabbi Avadi Yosef, listen what he says. Bedin misha nichshal emeshas ish. So what happens is you have a non-affiliated couple. The couple is living out in some town somewhere in Israel, in Tel Aviv. And the woman goes ahead and has an affair with somebody else. Now the halacha is, now they're not halachically, they're not Orthodox Jews, so they weren't asking the Shaila right now. But the halacha generally states, if a woman goes ahead and has an affair while she's married, she's not allowed to remain married to her husband. So here, they weren't religious. And you have a man goes and has an affair with a married woman. Now, the couple becomes Balei Tshuva, and that man, the outside party, also becomes a Balei Tshuva. And now they start learning a little bit, and the man wants to know, do I have an obligation to tell this couple that they are not allowed to remain married? Now, the woman has no idea. She didn't go to that class. She missed it. But the guy goes to yeshiva. He finds out all the intricacies of the halacha, and he finds out there's something that happened in our previous life that would make me have to tell that person that they're not allowed to remain married. Look what he says. Now they're all becoming chozer b'tshuva. Does he have to go ahead and tell the other husband, quite an uncomfortable conversation, maybe you can say, maybe I can find a way to be lenient. What an embarrassment that's going to be. And this is a major question. And Rabbi Avadia Yosef and others want to say that this should be dependent on our discussion here. What happens when somebody is actively violating an avera? Here you have a couple actively violating an avera every day, every moment that they remain together, but they have no idea. They're not educated enough to know. So they might find out 20 years down the line is their problem. But do I have an obligation to go and make them aware that they are violating an avera, or do we say no, kavod abrios will kick in? We're talking about an avera d'oraisa. We're talking about a biblical violation. But do we call that being passive, or do we call that being active? And therefore, he says, it depends whether they would be Svardim or Ashkenazim. If the Svardim are the ones asking the Shaila, they have to follow the Psak of the Shulchan Aruch and the Rambam, that's called being active. Doesn't matter what the fallout is going to be, that's what you have to do. That's what God expects of us. If they're Ashkenazim, then the Shaila will be very different. So that's a very fascinating question. Again, you see from here that these are extremely relevant. These questions happen. These situations come up, and they really happen. Another set of very fascinating and gripping questions when we talk about Kavod Abrios would be with regard to a Brecha Levatela. So there's a famous story about the Beis HaLevi. The Beis HaLevi was a Rav in a shul in Brisk, and one night, I don't know what happened, he didn't daven in shul, he forgot to count Sviras HaOmer. So he goes a whole day without counting Sfir. He comes to shul the next night. They want him to, the rabbi is usually the one to count Sfir, and he's kicking himself. What am I going to do? The rest of Sfira, it was the third night of Sfira, let's say. For the rest of the 6 weeks, I have to go and embarrass myself and let everybody know that I was a shlemazel and I forgot minyan last night. So the Beis HaLevi was toying with the fact that maybe Kavod Abrios should kick in. It's pretty embarrassing for the rabbi to tell everybody that he missed the minyan and that he didn't count Sfira. So he wasn't sure what to do. Okay, so you say, you're not rabbis, not so embarrassing. Okay, you figure out what to do. And especially if you have five rabbis, get the other one to do it. No big deal. So what do you do in a case like that? That's not so important. But listen to an important question that is far more difficult than that question about Sviras HaOmer. Whatever you do, you'll do. But also this question is very common in many different formulations, but it's very common. And there were women last night at the Shir who had never heard of such an issue. And it's very important to be aware of because it comes up in our generation, maybe not as extreme as this case, but in very different variations. Let's look at the following. Nishalti, I was asked to shayla odos isha shebiyosa tzeira pnuya. When the woman was a young woman, chaysa chayi isha simbachar echad benis abram imen. So, unfortunately, in our generation, on college campuses, this happens very often. You have women who are doing things they shouldn't do, men who are doing things that they shouldn't do, and she becomes pregnant. And it becomes a whole shaila nowadays. What do we write in the ksuba? There are rabbanim who nowadays say that anyone who is on, this is not me, I'm not weighing in on the issue, I'm just letting you know. There are those who assume that nowadays, when you have a woman who is on a secular campus, you cannot write in the ksuba besultada. Because their overwhelming majority, I don't know if it's true or not, I'm just saying, there are those who feel that it is so prevalent nowadays. Now, I would hope that in our community it's not the case. I would hope that that's true. But it happens. So here's the following story. So you have a girl who does something that she shouldn't have done, a guy who does something they shouldn't have done. Now she becomes pregnant. Ukshahukarhaubra, now she's pregnant enough that it's noticeable that she's pregnant. She realizes, well, we got a problem here. What are we going to do? Halcha itzorofe achad, so she goes to a clinic. Va'asala hapala malachutit, so he does an abortion for her. Achakach aver misham the iracheres, that's when she was young and immature, she did silly things. Now life moves on. She moves somewhere else, she moves on with life. V'chazer b'tshuva shlema b'shmiras Torah u'mitzvos. Now she's a regular, functioning, religious girl. She knows that she made a mistake, but okay, she wiped it out of her mind. Time to move on with life. Nisus lebachar yeshiva achar the dvar Hashem. Now she marries an innocent guy who has no idea what was going on. V'chayu yachta ba'ava ba'achva shalom v'reis. They have a great marriage. No reason why not. V'nis abra mimenu. Now they have a child. V'yadalo ben zachar. Now, this shaila happens all the time. It doesn't only happen in extreme cases like this. It happens when somebody has, unfortunately, a miscarriage that they don't want people to know about. They have a miscarriage. The first child is a miscarriage somewhere into the pregnancy. And now they didn't even tell their parents. They didn't tell anybody. Nobody knows. Now they have their first child. Now, right away, when the first kid is born, the parents are all excited. Pidden up, the parents are so nice. They go and rent out a hall. They rent a caterer. Everything's ready to go. And the couple is killing themselves. What are we going to do? We know that we're not supposed to have a pidden up then. What are we supposed to do now? So I'll give you a little secret. So what do we do in cases like this? It's happened many times. And I haven't been in the Rabbanus that long, but I myself have heard this in the White Shul. It happened a bunch of times when I was there. So what do we do when we have a case like this? So the secret is, if we have a case like that where really people don't know, and the family went ahead and arranged the Pidun HaBen anyway, we will try and get a Kohen who can play along with the story, and we will ask him to gargle up the bracha a little bit and not say Hashem's name. So that's what we try to do. Okay, so. Doesn't matter. What's the difference? It's not important, right? So that's when you have a very uncomfortable situation where, whatever. The easy way out is to say it wasn't a natural delivery. That's the easy way out, but that doesn't always fly, meaning the mother usually comes and asks, oh, how was the delivery and this and that. If you had a C-section, somebody's going to know, right? So again, it's uncomfortable. If we're talking about a case where everybody knows about the fact that there was a miscarriage before, something that went wrong, okay, so that's not such a violation of Kavod Abrios. Okay, so people know. But if we're talking about a case where the couple kept it very private and they really don't want people to know, so we have to deal with it. So here you have the case. Here you have the case as follows. You have this woman who in college had an abortion done, and now she's married, happily married, she has a child. And the problem is as follows. They came to me and they said they want to go ahead and have a naben as they are supposed to. He has no idea that before he married his wife, she had a whole previous history. She has no idea. Sorry, the husband has no idea that there was a whole story here. So the woman approaches the local rabbi and she says, so she tells the rabbi the whole story that took place in her previous life. Now the question is, do I have to go ahead and inform the husband of what happened? He's going to make a bracha on the pidun haben. He's not allowed to do so. Obviously, if I tell him, I'm going to destroy the shalom bayis, they're going to start fighting and arguing. Why do you do that? How do you do it? What happened? What didn't happen? Terrible story. Who's going to be able to straighten that out afterwards? Do we have a right maybe to say, you know what, let them make the bracha levatela, don't say anything, and just move on with life. Just leave it as is. It's our little secret. That was the question. It's a serious question. So he gets into a whole discussion about what exactly is the nature of the isra of bracha levatela. Well, it's a machlokas Tosas and the Rambam. Tosas holds it's only an Issa Darabanan. The Rambam holds an Issa Daraisa. Well, that makes a major difference. If it's an Issa Daraisa, you'll say, we don't have a right to violate an Issa Daraisa, even though it's going to compromise someone's human dignity, someone's Kavod Abrios. On the other, if you say it's only an Issa Darabanan, you'll say, we can always violate an Issa Darabanan in order to save someone from an embarrassing situation. So these are very prevalent questions. These are all questions that come up all the time in all kinds of different variations, but basically what we learn from all of this is, Kavod HaBrios is not just a nice, fluffy, sensitive idea that we should all think about and to be nice to other people and pat them on the back and give them a phone call. That's very nice. It's something that we take into account, into very serious consideration when dealing with a shayla and halacha as well. We will never just paskin a shayla without looking at the ramifications or the fallout of what the psak might be. Look, sometimes the answer is, Yikav Adin HaSahar, it is what it is. God tells us it's what we have to do. Ein chachma vein tefillin vein etzel l'neged Hashem. What are you supposed to do? This is what God wants. We don't have a way to get around it. Unfortunately, that's the case. How much does it kill all of us that we have agunas that we just don't know how to figure out what to do for them? We don't know what to do for them. Not where the husband is being ma'agin. Forget about that. We do have what to do for them. But what about a case where you have somebody who went lost, missing in a war, and now 25 years later, the wife can't remarry? Does it pain us? Of course it pains us. But sometimes the halacha has a stone wall and says, this is what it is. But at the same time, there are so many places in the halacha where we have to take into consideration what the fallout is going to be of the psak, and how much kavod habrios is going to be a factor, and how much that needs to be taken into the determination of what the psak is going to be. And as we saw, so often in so many different areas of halacha, we find that this is absolutely the determining factor, and it's something that every responsible rav or posek has to take with a very serious degree of sensitivity and responsibility to always remember and to always...